Take me where the promises are real.
Hey y'all, let's have an AA meeting. My name is Amy and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speaker Meeting at the Nava Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more sobriety tells his or her story.
I'm Noelle, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Noelle.
This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual and our own personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And I get the pleasure of introducing tonight's speaker. Our speaker is Susan, who's just the dearest friend of mine. She's one of the smartest, kindest, funniest people you'll ever meet. And someone made the comment earlier that Susan brought out all the celebrities tonight to come to hear her story. And a lot of us are staying up well past our bedtime, but it's an easy choice to make because Susan would do that and more for her friends. So and I look forward to you getting to know her the way we do. And I introduce my friend Susan.
I'm Susan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
and welcome to your first meeting. If you have a problem with alcohol, you're in the right place. So I hope that I can tell you a little bit about how alcohol had impacted my family and I, how I came to terms with the fact that I'm an alcoholic, and how the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has helped me stay sober. My sobriety date is February 28th of 2010, and my home group is here at NAVA. It's the 545 How It Works group. So I have a brother and a sister. My sister was 5 years older than I am, and my brother is 3 years older. And my parents divorced when I was 2 years old. And my dad adopted my brother and my sister from my mother's first husband. And so there was a disconnect between my siblings and my dad to some extent. My dad, he spent a lot of good quality time with me. I do have a lot of memories with my dad early on. My brother and sister, they stopped coming to visit my dad when maybe I was around eight. They were able to stay at my mom's on the weekend. And so my brother and my sister, they were, a little on the wild side. My mother was a bartender, so she was gone at night a lot. So we had a lot of freedom. And my brother and sister, they like to drink beer and, do other things. And so that was one way to keep me quiet, was to give me a little beer. I wouldn't tell on them. My dad, he drank a lot. He still took really good care of me. And he had a bar in his den, so I could play around a little bit with some drinks there. And so I was maybe eight or nine when I started mixing drinks in his den. I never really got drunk. And my dad went away for 30 days. I was around 10 years old. And I remember him being gone for a long time, and my mom was explaining that he was in the hospital and that, the doctors were, trying to work with him. He was an alcoholic. And he had to stop drinking. And so that's when my dad got sober. He came into the rooms of AA, and I remember a lot of things changed around the house. And he had gin and vodka that he kept underneath the kitchen sink. So this was in 1980 when he got sober. And I was smart enough to know that it was clear liquid, and if I wanted some of it, I could fill that bottle back up with water. He wasn't drinking it, and he wouldn't know. So at 11 years old, that's the first time that I got drunk. And my dad called me, and it was horrible. I can't imagine, now being in the program, my 11-year-old daughter getting a hold of my alcohol that, I've made 12-step calls on. And getting drunk on that, but that's how he found me. And the good thing that came out of that situation was that my dad got full custody of me. And that's really kind of what needed to happen at that time. And we moved from Atlanta to Alabama, a small town in the country, cornfields. It was just in the middle of nowhere. But we had a lot of, we spent a lot of good quality time with one another, and I could come back and see my brother and my sister once a month. And so that continued, and when I would come home to visit my family here, my brother and sister, they liked to party, so I could, I got to party then. And at 15, there were some things that took place in Alabama, and I was old enough to make the decision to live where I wanted to live. And, my dad didn't want to go to court and fight or anything like that. I moved back here with my mom. And my mom and I, we just had an agreement that, I would tell her the truth, whatever I was doing, wouldn't drink and drive. And, my brother and my sister had already kind of put her through the ringer, so she knew the ropes and knew what was going to happen. And my dad just kind of had to let me go on my journey. He was, I did get to give him a lot of his medallions, and I did get to go to AA meetings with him, so I kind of knew, what the people in the rooms were like, and he had a lot of good friends. He did a lot of service work. He got sober at the Terror Club in Hayteville. And so when he would come to visit, that's where I would meet him there. So I pretty much took care of myself in high school. My brother moved out, and he went into the Navy. So with my mom, I was active in school. I was a cheerleader, and it's a small school, Hayteville. So there were a lot of things that were going on in that town. Not just alcohol, but, I drank and I partied with everybody in town. It was just, kind of what everyone did. And at the, my senior years, when some things started changing with me, I got kicked off the cheerleading team for drugs and alcohol. And I moved out of my mom's house, and I rented a room from my friend's grandmother, so I had my own living room and bedroom and bathroom, and was just drinking almost every day. And if I wasn't drinking, then I was doing other things. I did manage to graduate from high school, and I had a lot of, close friends, probably about seven really close girlfriends that cared a lot about me, and they knew that I was, having problems with drugs and alcohol. And so my senior trip to Florida, my friend Kim, she did the first intervention. So I was really having a hard time, and she had me call my dad. We were in Panama City, and I told him that I needed some help. And when we got home from that trip, I left the next day, and I went and I moved back in with my dad in Alabama. And I straightened it up for about 3 months, and I started to try to go to college. And my, my first real close friend there, she was into things that, I wanted to be involved with, which were illegal. And I had a fake ID, and So we did get to go to a lot of bars and do a lot of things that were, you know, things I shouldn't have been doing. And I still lived with my dad. He met a lady in the rooms, and they were both sober. He'd stayed sober the whole time, and I knew that I was in the way, and I was causing problems in their relationship. And I was getting to the point where I was going to move out. I was 20 years old, and I was staying out all night. I wouldn't always call and let him know that I wasn't coming home. So that had happened one night. Bless you. I had done that one night, and when I got home, my room was downstairs. He called, he yelled down for me to come up, and he had to tell me that my sister had been killed in a car accident. She was 26, and when that happened, and Meredith, that's my sister, she was strung out on cocaine, and she was in a blackout, they're pretty sure, when she died. So with all the drugs that, you know, she had, I knew that she was, she was strung out pretty bad. I knew that, and so I kind of made the decision that I needed to kind of back off some drugs, and I thought that, I was just going to just, drink and only do drugs recreationally. Only an alcoholic says do drugs recreationally, right? But I thought the drugs were going to kill me, and the alcohol wouldn't. So it didn't take me long. I found my way back here to Atlanta, and that was my goal, was just to drink. And that's when I got my first DUI. I was 21 years old, and was leaving a bar on Virginia Avenue, and I was in a blackout, and I had a car accident on 75, and I had a family that were on their way to a family vacation in Florida, and I don't remember doing that. I did call the police on myself, and I woke up in Clayton County Jail, and that's when I kind of had to, put things together. My mom had to come and get me out of jail. She had just buried her other daughter, and that is, hard to process. So my goal was to, not drink and drive. I wasn't ready to stop drinking. I was only, 21 years old. I did have, a lot of expenses with the court, but they didn't send me to AA. I had known from, an early age, my parents were telling me, you probably have the, the gene, you're probably an alcoholic, and then with that, the car accident and everything, they really, had a conversation with me. Wasn't long after that I met a guy, and he was my boss, and we got pregnant, and at the time, we thought that, we should get married, and I didn't really think about him not having a driver's license. He had a good job. It was okay. He had these people from the, work that could chauffeur him around. He had it, he managed pretty well, but he had problems with drugs, and we got married, and we were married for 2 years, but we got married in July. By November, he was out of the house. But the good news is we have a beautiful son together, and my son Tyler was born in 1993, and that's when, my life changed. I had to be responsible. Ron, my ex-husband, he was out doing his thing. He had, he suffers from addiction, and it's completely okay for me to tell you this. I do have permission from him to say these things. He can say the same about me, and you'll see why. But so anyways, I had to sober up and be a mom so I could only binge drink. So I was able to binge drink all the way through my 20s. And there were times Brian got remarried, and he married a great lady, had a beautiful family, and things went really well for him for a long time. And then his addiction got the best of him. So Tyler could not go see him, you know, from the age of 9 on. And in my 30s is when my drinking kind of picked up. So I was 34 years old when I felt like I had to drink every night. So it was, you know, progressive. It was just a long process for me. And I knew that I was going to need help at some point. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to save AA for the bitter end. I got books, you know, how to control my drinking, how to drink moderately. I made it a point if I was going to a social gathering, you know, I could have a couple of beers and then I needed to get home. So no one could really see, you know, the kind of shape that, you know, I was planning on getting into. I made arrangements for Tyler to spend the night off, so I thought that I had, you know, all of that under control. On the nights that he was doing something else, I could really get, you know, good and drunk. And so the last 2 years of my drinking, it was just over and over again. I had my start time for drinking had moved from, you know, 8:30 at night when he was getting ready to go to bed all the way up till 6:30. And there was a series of events that started happening. Like I would be in a blackout and I would hallucinate and I would call a friend and they would come over and I wouldn't remember the next day. And I was in a, you know, crazy state of mind. That happened twice. So some other people were aware of, you know, some things that were going on with me. I didn't want to quit drinking. Everyone around me, all of my family, with the exception of my dad, drank. All my friends drank. And another thing with my dad, when I was 28 years old, he moved back here to Georgia. He and his wife, they got a divorce. My dad had brain surgery. He did well on his own, but he did need some help. He had long-term, short-term memory loss. So I had been looking after him. He lived by himself and just made sure that he, you know, had his medicine and appointments and stuff like that. So my dad was the only one in my family that did not drink. And so I started going to meetings, AA meetings online. And the people in online said, get your tail to a meeting. You know, you need help. And I just knew when I walked in these doors, it was going to be over for me, because that's how I saw my dad live his life. He came into AA and he never drank again. And all the people that were around him and coming into my house, that's how they lived. So it was the last straw. So I decided to go to a psychiatrist and see if maybe they could give me something to, you know, help me get through it and continue to drink. And they wanted me to go into detox. And that was not an option. Unfortunately, you know, Ron had... He was in prison, so he'd lost the wife and the beautiful cars and everything, and so he wasn't around to take Tyler, so I really didn't have an option. But I told the psychiatrist, you know, just give me a chance. You know, my dad got sober in AA, let me try that out. And so in 2009, it was October of 2009 is when I said, okay, I'm going to go to AA and I'm going to get some help. And I came in and... honestly, I just was floored. You know, I could not believe that this is where my life had ended up. How I got to this place, I was just confused. I had to take medical leave. Day 3 is when, I mean, it was just, I could hardly get up out of bed. Detox was not an option for me. My psychiatrist did have me on Xanax. I was to take that. I was having shortness of breath, and I was shaking. And, I went to my first meeting, and I didn't pick up a white chip that night. I was too afraid, and I was just so confused. And but what they did tell me is that, you know, I could have some orange juice, and I could, you know, eat some candy and get some sugar into my system, and you know, it would help with some of the withdrawals. And so I did that, and then the second night, you know, I went. And so my plan with my psychiatrist was to make 2 meetings a day. I took leave from work. I don't even know how I managed not to get fired from that job, but I did not get fired. And so I did that, you know, for 2 weeks. After 10 days is when the shortness of breath and everything, you know, kind of went away. At that point, I had the meetings that I wanted to go to. I was making connections with women. No one told me in the meetings that I was an alcoholic. They did tell me I was going to have to, you know, they suggested that I get a sponsor. And, you know, the sponsor is that one person that was going to help me understand the program, help me read through the big book and make a decision if I was an alcoholic based on what the book of Alcoholics Anonymous has to say. And my comprehension was awful. There were, I couldn't complete a sentence, you know, for the first, I don't know, 2 months. It was so hard processing words. And I did get a sponsor. And with the steps, you know, she sat down with me. She spent a lot of time with me. So with step one, you know, I had known for a long time that I was powerless over alcohol. The part about my life being unmanageable, I just, you know, I wasn't really seeing it. I still hadn't lost my job. I hadn't lost custody of my son. But I wanted to stay sober, and I wanted to stay sober for Tyler. I was afraid that I was going to, you know, really mess things up for him. And so we just continued to move through the steps. And so this step two, the part about the word sanity, you know, in step two, restore us to sanity, I thought, I'm not insane. You know, I'm all right. I'm not that bad. And then with the turning my life and my will over to the care of God, I didn't trust God. You know, I was, you know, he had taken my sister. There were things that had happened. I was angry. That's not someone that I was going to trust. I did go to church from time to time with my cousins when I was growing up. I was introduced to their God. But it's not one that I trusted. And I spent 5 months in AA around a lot of sober people, and I was having fun. But I would not do a 4th step. I wouldn't take that inventory. I did not want to let someone else know anything about me. You know, my pride got in the way. I didn't want anyone to have a, you know, bad impression of me. I couldn't do it, or I wouldn't do it. And I went back out. I called my sponsor. I was in Publix. She told me to call her before I drank. And so I called her, and I said, this is what I'm doing. I'm going to drink. There was nothing that she could do to stop me, because a lot of things started happening that week before. I had already made my mind up, and I had a lot of people from the rooms calling me, all women, you know, trying to get me to go to the movies, go to a meeting, let them come over, do anything but take that drink. And I did it anyway. And I stayed out for 11 days. And that 11 days, I drank 4 times. 3 times I blacked out. And on the 4th night, it was on a Saturday, and I had made arrangements for Tyler to go spend the night off with one of his friends. And I was on my 3rd or 4th beer, and, you know, I was thinking about my life and, you know, the disease of alcoholism. I knew that I wasn't going to be able to continue to drink those 3 nights. I mean, I was hiding bottles, and Tyler, you know, had to tell me that I was sleepwalking and things like that. He knew what was going on. And so I said, God, please help me. You know what? I want to try this again. I want to live a sober life. And I got up and I poured that beer down the kitchen sink, and I haven't had one since. And I went to an AA meeting that Sunday night. And at the end of the month, we always celebrate birthdays, anniversaries. And my home group has about 100 members. And I did not even know what day it was. It was the 28th of February. It was birthday celebrations. And I had to, you know, I almost did not get up and pick up another white chip because there were so many people in that room. And I did. I got up and I picked up a white chip and I let people know that I needed help. And my sponsor, she wanted me to really think about, you know, who was going to be the best person to take me through the steps and for me to pray about it. Prayer was not something that was part of my life then. And maybe to think about someone that I saw in meetings on a regular basis. I had gone back to work, so my meeting schedule had changed. And I thought about it for a week. And there was a lady that, you know, she was always busy in service work. She was always around. Funny. Oh, my gosh, she's so much fun. And I asked her to, you know, to sponsor me. And she's been my sponsor for over 9 years. She has been through it all with me. And we started back over with step one, and I spent a lot of time and with a group of women. It's a women's meeting, and I was, you know, really slow to start. Gosh, making time for that, it was just, you know, it was not on the top of my list. But these ladies invited me to go to the Bahamas. One of the ladies had a house there. You know, all you had to do was get your plane ticket, that kind of thing. And so here I am, you know, 4 months sober. And I said, okay, you know, I've never been on a sober vacation. I'll go. It's safe. So me and 9 other women took off. And at this point, I still did not believe in God, really. I wasn't sure. And we were out snorkeling, and there were beautiful fish all around a reef, and there was a lot of laughter. We kept coming up out of the water, and I could hear a lot of laughter, and I thought, you know, I went back down under the water and was checking the fish out, and I came back up, and I just kind of, you know, hovered on top of the water, and I was looking around at all these ladies, and I thought, you know what, they're sober, and you know, all this beautiful creation here, there is something out there that has made all this happen. And, you know, what's wrong with believing in a God? You know, it's a creator of the universe, whatever you think you want it to be, Susan. But, you know, this is, you have all these strong women around you. They're all happy and sober. Why don't you, you know, take some more action. You know, I made the decision when I got home I was going to get busy with Becky, and that's what I did. I did, you know, I was ready for my fourth step, and it was so hard comprehending what was in the big book. She met with me, and I, you know, did all the columns, and it was that fourth column that she really had to help point some things out and talk through some things with me. And, you know, I saw where, you know, I played a part in a lot of that. And we just continued. I mean, I had probably 4 meetings with her just to get all that first inventory finished. And I felt a lot better. Inventories still today are, you know, they happen for me on a regular basis. But I continued to, you know, take suggestions from her and other people in the rooms. I became the secretary for my home group and got involved and, you know, made friends and was a part of the program. And I was able to do that for 2 years. And with that, you know, our meeting earlier was on step 6, and we were talking about, you know, our character defects and, you know, asking God to remove them and those type of things. And I think for me, it's taken some time. I just made a lot of mistakes in sobriety. And I'm learning not to do things the same way. And that's okay. I'm so glad that I don't feel like I have to be perfect, and I can let other women know what's going on with me. And it took probably about 4 years for me to get completely honest with Becky, where that woman knows everything about me. And I have a couple of other friends that, you know, I have that same relationship with today. But I did get, you know, busy with some service work and with my 8-step amends list. You know, there were some people that I was just able to talk through that list with her. I didn't have to go and make amends to everyone on that list, but it sure was good to let someone else know what was going on between my heart and my mind with that stuff. And the one person that I told Becky that I could not, I said, you know, I will never forgive Ron, Tyler's dad. I said, you know, at that point I told her that I hated him and that I would never forgive him. And she asked me to just start praying for him. And I did to some extent, but not really. And I got a call from him, and he had been released from a county jail, and the next day he was going to a federal judge. And he wasn't sure that he was going to make that court hearing, that he thought that he better call me because he thought about running. And I was able to make my amends to him, and I told him that I was, you know, I'm an alcoholic, and I've, you know, came into the rooms of AA, and I'm sorry that I had, you know, all the things that I had said to him, but I'm sick, and I'm trying to get better, and my life is better. Tyler knows that I'm in the program, and, you know, his life is getting better. It's hard, you know, I don't have to live that way. And Ron went to his court hearing the next day, and he has been sober ever since. And he took his sentence, and with that, people brought meetings into the jail where he was, and that's how he got sober. And that's why it's okay for me to tell you this. I'm in his story, he's in mine, but Tyler has 2 sober parents because of this program. And he's busy with service work and other things too. So, you know, we are able to have Christmas dinner. You know, we can celebrate Tyler's birthdays, all kinds of great stuff. And so with Tyler, you know, he really threw some, you know, I guess curveballs my way. At 18, he told me, you know, he's getting a motorcycle, and there was nothing, you know, he had been preparing me since he was 16, and I was super controlling. Oh my gosh, it had to be my way, or everybody in around was going to pay. And, you know, that's the one big dose of, you know, acceptance that I had to, you know, there was nothing I could change about it. Today I have to embrace it. You know, I had a lot of fear around him riding, and, you know, today, he gets motorcycle parts. I even helped him, you know, polish his tank and chrome and everything for bike week. And, you know, that's where I am. I support him. I love him. And I don't have to control his life. But it's taken a lot of work for me to do that. Same thing with my dad, you know. We were having dinner before the meeting, and we were talking about our parents. And, you know, I had an aunt tell me, before my dad passed away, she said, you know, Susan, he's probably lived a good 10 years longer because, you know, you've kind of forced to keep him alive. And I thought, that's all my control issues is what I've done to him. And my dad was, you know, such a great guy, but he fell and he broke his hip. But before that, he had gotten to a place where he could not drive, and there were some nights when I needed to go over and help him, and I was already in the program, and I was in a different room, but I could hear my dad, saying his prayers. And he had long-term and short-term memory loss because of a brain surgery, but he would open his prayer with the Serenity Prayer. And he remembered all of that, and he would pray for every family member and every person around us, and he would close with the Lord's Prayer. And I got to hear that, and it was just like, my gosh. You know, that gave me so much hope, thinking, you know, he can't remember his grandson's name sometimes, but he knows the Serenity Prayer. And, you know, he would take out, you know, as Bill sees it, and he would read it every day. And that was part of his life. So many, all the AA literature stayed on his, you know, coffee table. And he died, you know, 33 years sober. One thing that happened that's pretty cool, he got to a place where he couldn't drive. So I had all these friends in AA. And, you know, if you don't drink for a long time, you stay healthy. And people look really good in these rooms. So what Dad had was he had sober chauffeurs. These were ladies that were, you know, 68, 70 years old. And they were, I'm telling you what, they were good-looking ladies. And these were his chauffeurs. And that's how parted, you know, I mean, he loved it. He walked in the Waffle House, you know, and when he was in the hospital, his last visit to the hospital, he was, you know, his eyes were moving around, and I said, you know, he told me that he was hallucinating, and he had a lot of pain medicine in him, and I said, well, what are you seeing? And he said, just a bunch of guys. And I said, well, are you afraid? And he said, no, I'm not afraid. They're good guys. All these, there's a lot of them in here. And then I brought him some ice chips, and he told me, he said, you just walked straight through a drunk guy. And I realized that, you know, I mean, what it made me think was that was, you know, the meeting in the sky. That's what was happening. I want to think that that's how it was, because that's how I want it to be for me and all of you. And it was just it was my spiritual experience going through that, and I was able to embrace it and not control it. And, you know, it was just really a beautiful thing. The other thing that, you know, he got to see me get sober. And then, you know, the friends that I have made here in AA, you know, they're still around. You know, I moved to Decatur 2 years ago, and it was very hard leaving Henry County. That's where I got sober. I'm only 45 minutes away, but those ladies were there, you know, when you go through hard times. Tyler was in a horrible, you know, car accident. They're there. They're real friends. And I was slow to find another home group when I got here. It took me 6 months to really find a home group where I wanted to be, and it's changed my life here. And you know, we've got all these ladies over here. We were able to go to dinner. I'll look around the room, and you know, I had to, you know, make time for these friendships and these relationships, and I can have the same thing wherever I go. I think about the ladies that, you know, I'm able to sponsor. I think that is where, you know, a lot of changes started taking place in me. You know, it was one thing for Becky and people in, you know, literature meetings and that kind of thing to sit down and go through the big book as a, you know, with me or, you know, and others in a group setting. But when you sit down with another woman and go through the steps, gosh, it's such a beautiful thing. And there's some ladies that have been in my life for a long time, and I always want new. You know, so that's happened for me recently, but I've put forth the effort to, you know, reach out. And that's really where I've grown, and I love it. So, you know, you two ladies, I hope that, I'm sorry tonight was a speaker meeting, your first meeting, but I hope you keep coming back, because the fellowship in these rooms is like no other. You know, I've been given a second chance, really a third chance, and I'm very grateful. And I thank you for asking me to speak, and it's time to wrap it up, and I'll turn it back over to you. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Susan. That was awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. I'm glad I was here. I have asked Lisa to pass out the chips.
My name's Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic.
Oh, thank you.
Here at the Blue Chip Speaker Meeting Group, we offer chips to show your amount of sobriety. So if anybody wants to get a white chip, come and get it.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. If anybody has 30 days sober.
Days.
Keep coming. And 6 months. Keep coming back. 9 months. Keep coming back. And anybody have a year tonight? Or multiple? Okay, keep coming. And I'm going to offer a white chip one more time. Because it's the most important chip. Surrender. For anybody else. Okay, I'm going to leave it here in case.
All right!
Thank you. Chips have been offered.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you for one and all and joining the Blue Chip Speaker Meeting tonight.
First I slept and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me and finally waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises all real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart that beats for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Something that set me free. And I'd love to move in harmony. See love as a vision that one day would appear. Take me where the promises are.